next mic. Sound like me introducing somebody. Hi, everybody. My name is Merle. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Merle.
My sobriety date is October 15, 2003. My home group is the Buckingham Group on Tuesday nights, step study meeting. I don't have a memorized speech here, so please forgive me if there's some moments of silence. I did pray before I came in here, and I talked to my sponsor last Wednesday, a couple days ago, whatever. And I was supposed to call him again today, and I called him, but he wasn't there, so I didn't get to ask him anything I should be saying. So I just kind of remember the last time he told me to be honest, and that's all I remember from that conversation. So I'll be honest to the best of my ability today. It's funny, I've been up at the podium before and started telling stuff that wasn't true. It was like, I got to sit down. You know, how does that happen? You know, I don't know. I'm going to sound better than I am. I started drinking probably when I was 15, somewhere in there, ninth grade, just drinking with friends, and didn't have a problem with it, I didn't think, but I do know that I got drunk, and I liked it, and I continued on with that for a long time. Well, to me, it was a long time. I was probably 20 when I started having some real problems with it, and the law problems didn't seem like a big deal. I thought that just went with the drinking game. I thought everybody got DUIs and public intoxications on a regular basis. And, I was always making payments for fines, never for cars or anything else. I was always making payments to the court system. And when I was 20, it seemed like it started bothering me emotionally. It was like I was sick and tired of being drunk all the time, but I couldn't quit either. I wanted to. I did a bunch of times. I was always on the wagon, you know, for keeps this time. And the next thing I know, I got to go out and have a couple beers to loosen up, and I'm one of those guys that's never had a couple beers. I had a lot more, you know. Usually till I either passed out or got locked up. And sometimes I made it home, you know, and then wake up with guilt, remorse, whatever, you know, feeling bad and late for work again, hungover. And I started becoming pretty much unemployable because I was late all the time. And I had a track record. And people didn't want to hire me. And I was staying at my sister's house. I didn't want to pay the rent, you know. All my money went to drinking. And I guess that's pretty self-centered, you know. My sister and brother-in-law didn't seem to have a problem with it. But I probably was, because something made me feel guilty inside all the time, you know. I remember one of my friends from high school that I drank a lot with came over one day, and he's like, "Where you been, man?" And I ain't left town. You know, we both live in the same town. It's this little teeny town in Iowa. Probably 2,000 people live there. When I was partying, there was probably 4 bars and 8 churches and 12 or 13 gas stations, you know. Little town. Everybody knew everybody. And I knew most everybody really well. My dad ran a gas station, and I was in the public all the time. And then I started hanging out in bars all the time. I just knew everybody, it seemed like. And if I didn't know them, maybe they had knew me when I'd introduced myself to them. And I wasn't afraid of people then. It's weird. I'm kind of like more shy today than I was then. But maybe because I was drunk most of the time. I wasn't a morning drinker, but I would drink in the mornings if I wasn't working and, you know, we had something to go do. just drinking. I was thinking of that today when I was at this restaurant with Cindy. We sat in the bar area because I smoke, and we looked at the liquor bottles for a minute because I told her about some story about a lady looking for Absolut vodka bottles at work the other day, and we were trying to figure out which one was the Absolut on the shelf, and I got to thinking about that, you know, I'm in a neutral place today. You know, I wasn't craving a drink, and I wasn't scared to be there either, you know. It's just, you know, that's where you go if you smoke and you're at a restaurant. You know, you're going to go sit in the bar area. And that's good, because I remember coming out, very rarely did I go in bars in the daytime and come out while it was still light, but I remember doing that a few times and about being blinded. You know, I was like, holy cow, Jesus, you know? I remember this friend coming over to my sister's house and asked me where I've been, and, you know, I said, I've been right here, you know, sitting on my sister's couch watching their cable TV while they're at work and smoking their pot. You know, that's what I've been doing, you know. And I can't go uptown because I'm going to get drunk, you know. And he says, well, let's go have a couple beers and loosen up. He could tell I was depressed. And I really did think I was going to have to go to a place like Western State for depression. I only knew about the place because my brother, a long time in Berlin, you know, a long time before that, had to go there because he got caught being drunk for the first time in his life, and he got sent to a mental institution. That was in, like, the 60s. And he came back never the same. You know, he's been on drugs ever since. And most of them are off the street, not out of the doctor's hallucinogenic cabinet. I know I got drunk that day, you know. I didn't go uptown and have a couple of beers. And I remember another time, like right along in there, I came to the conclusion the only way I was going to be able to quit drinking was to move away from town. And being unemployable, pretty much, I didn't have any money to move. You know, I couldn't do a geographical cure on my own. So I joined the military. I was the oldest guy at basic training. And I was 25, and I didn't drink for 8 weeks, and I was a new man. I felt great. You know, it was the first time I've been in shape since junior high. And as soon as they let us out the gate, I was the first guy to go get drunk, you know. I was taking all these young guys to go to the bars and the strip clubs and all that kind of stuff, you know. I wasn't afraid to go in like they were, you know. That was my regular hangout. And I got sent to my permanent duty station down in southern Alabama, and I thought, hot dog, you know, I'm going to be down there. I forgot I joined the Army to quit drinking. I did. I joined the Army to quit drinking. And but now I've forgotten that. And, you know, I'm in shape, man. You know, hangovers don't hurt as much. It's easier to walk around, 40 pounds lighter, you know. And I guess I had some sort of ego then, you know, from the training we'd been through. And I went to my first duty station down in southern Alabama. I thought I'd be at stock car races and drinking moonshine every night or every weekend. And I only remember drinking moonshine once down there, and it was some really nasty stuff, you know. I was outside of a bar one night, and they had it in a milk jug. And I was like, man, this is homebrew. I'm glad I don't drink this regularly, you know, but I drank some anyway, you know, after it went around a couple of times. I got into a lot of trouble in the Army from drinking, and they finally kicked me out, and I'd been introduced several times to Alcoholics Anonymous while I was in the Army, and I didn't want what people had. I didn't even think I had alcoholism, and I was convinced before I joined the Army that I was an alcoholic. I'd been introduced to a guy that was in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he's my county counselor of some sort. I don't know. Looked good in front of the judge for my next DUI. And I listened to all the stories he had to tell me about his drinking. That's what we talked about at my counseling sessions, and not much about mine. I guess he was helping me identify with being an alcoholic, because when it was over with, I remember telling him that, you know, I might be an alcoholic, but it's too early to quit. I'll quit when I'm 26, and by the time I turned 25, life had become unbearable, and I joined the Army. And down there in Alabama, I got, in 3 years, I got two DUIs and a possession charge in between them. And it seemed like I was always paying the judge. It was just like it was before I joined the Army. I was always making payments. On my way out of the Army, it was like, well, I'm going to have to go back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember being in Honduras. That was the last place I was at before I got kicked out. And I remember having a big book under my bunk, and I was drunk, you know. That's the way I spent the 90 days down there. They would let us drink beer, but we were only supposed to have three per night. But they had Hondurans that ran the PX, and as long as we were only buying three, it was okay, and they didn't care how many times we came back. We just stood in line, drank our three beers, waiting to get back in, because it was a real small place that they sold the beer out of, and we had to stand in line to get in the place, so we'd stand in line, drink our three beers, get three more, and go back to the end of the line, you know. And there was plenty of nights I don't remember going back to the tent or anything. I blacked out. I was a regular blackout drinker, definitely, since high school. I thought that happened to everybody, you know. I didn't know that it doesn't happen to everybody. Not everybody drinks like that. But I thought everybody did. I was at a Bob Dylan concert one night a few years ago, and they sold drinks outside the auditorium where he was singing. And we were out there for, my friend was drinking a couple drinks, and no one was drunk. I thought everybody at rock shows and stuff like that were insanely drunk, you know, because I always was, you know. I've had some pretty good performances of my own at those kind of things, you know. guys from my hometown telling, man, I saw you at the concert running down across the tops of chairs, you know, on the floor. I was like, no, I don't remember that. But like I said, I've been introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous in the Army, and every time I got in trouble, they sent me to a counselor who sent me to AA. And I got a different idea of AA while I was down there in Alabama than what I had at home. And I knew there was hope here for me. I just didn't want to do what you people do, you know. I didn't want to believe in God. I don't know why that was. It wasn't like I was an atheist or anything like that. It was just I was scared of God. I really think that. And I didn't know it at the time. But I think that's what the deal was. And I had a lot of misperceptions or whatever, old ideas that don't work, believing in God. You know, like, he has a black book and I'm in trouble, you know. I don't know where I got that idea. You know, I grew up in church, but I'm sure they didn't say anything like that, you know. I knew that if I went back to my hometown when I was getting kicked out of the Army, that I would end up at the Knotty Pine Bar before I ended up at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. So I stayed in southern Alabama. And I met this guy at one of the meetings that, you know, made mentionable while he was talking at one of the meetings that he lived by himself. And I was like, I'll ask him to be my sponsor because I need a place to stay. And, you know, I didn't know it at the time, but that's pretty self-centered, right? But it was survival, you know. I knew all about survival. I had MREs underneath, you know, in my trunk of my car, so, you know, if I'm out of money, at least I got some food to eat. Army dehydrated food. I got a trunk full. And I never did eat them, I don't think, but I didn't like them, you know. I acquired them all from not eating them, you know, when they were served. But you know, he had one requirement of me to stay at his house, and that was to go to two meetings a day. He said, "You get to the meeting at noon on your own, and I'll get you to the night meeting." Because he went every night. He was a student, and he told me I didn't have to pay him any rent. because the Army was paying for his. He'd been what they called rifted out of the Army, and so he didn't pay the rent. The Army did, so he didn't feel like he was being put out by letting me stay with him. And we went through the steps out of the 12 and 12, and I knew no more about what was going on after that than I knew before we started, you know. Maybe I got some different ideas about a higher power from that, you know. But I knew no more about me than I did before we started. Because I knew when we did the four-step, I knew all the stuff I'd done, and that's basically what that four-step for me did in that, out of that, working it out of that book, was I got to relive my wrongdoings while drunk, basically, you know? And I didn't identify with being self-centered and being eaten up with resentments and fear. And I just didn't, you know, I didn't grasp that from that. And I finally moved out of his place after 3 or 4 months, moved in with some girl that was in AA, and, you know, I'm lucky I stayed sober during that time, and we quit going to meetings, and, you know, I pretty much sponsored myself for the next 12 or 13 years, and I had sponsors in name, but I didn't ever talk to them, didn't ever do any more four-step work, never practiced an 11-step, didn't know the 11th step was in the big book, you know. You know, I moved a few times, and because I was always having problems with other people. My life was a mess, and I wasn't drinking. You know, it was unmanageable, big time. And I was always looking for someone to pay my way. And I finally moved in with some friends out in Virginia Beach because they said, well, if you're having all those problems going to college down in Alabama because of roommates, well, you want to move out here and you can go to college here. Just what I'm looking for. That's excellent. And I moved to Virginia Beach, and I hadn't been there about a couple of weeks, and my buddy told me I'm going to have to start paying him some rent because the last person they let live with him was her brother, and they charged him money, so I was going to have to pay him some money. So he helped me find a job with one of his neighbors. And I wasn't going to Alcoholics Anonymous there in Virginia Beach because I'd been to one meeting, and they didn't do it right. And I don't know how anybody stays sober on that, you know. And, you know, well, how was I staying sober, you know? You know, there was a lot more treatment centers there in Virginia Beach, I think, you know. And this one dude told me, after I finally started going, I was out exercising one day, and the guy, and it's hot down there, and the guy had a cold beer on the hood of his car as I was walking back to the house. And it looked very, very attractive to me. And it had been the first time in 5 or 6 years that a cold beer really looked attractive. And it kind of scared me, you know. I really didn't want to drink. And I'm going to have to go back to these AA meetings here, you know. There's got to be some meeting that's, you know, I can get something out of. I was always trying to get something out of Alcoholics Anonymous. I never wanted to put anything into it. And so I started going to meetings then. And that's where I met Cindy, who was at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting down at the beach. And after moving in with her in a couple weeks, she decided after a few months that she needed to move back to Nelson County. And by that time, I was going to school there in Virginia Beach, and or Norfolk by that time. But I was like, man, I got to move now. And she told me, well, there's schools there, you know. Okay, I can stay on my path, then, you know. So we moved to Nelson County, and I kept on going to school. I finally graduated from Longwood. But in that time period, I started smoking pot, going to meetings, and being, I don't know, happy some of the time, unhappy most of the time, you know, and judgmental of people. I couldn't ask anybody to be my sponsor in the area I was at because they told me they were racist or they didn't do this or they didn't talk about that. You know, I'm like, none of these guys measure up, you know. I'm sponsoring myself. And finally, you know, smoking pot didn't work for me anymore. I didn't do it all the time, you know. Until the very last time that I did it for a whole year on a daily basis pretty much. And I was really afraid I couldn't quit because I thought I was going to quit after 6 months. And when that time came, it was just like drinking. I'm going to quit tomorrow. Quit after the next bag, you know. And I finally just went cold turkey and was in a what I would call a depression for like a year, you know. And I don't know why Cindy put up with me, you know. I was always angry at her and just unhappy with life in general. And ended up going to the meeting down in Buckingham, and I went there under the guise of trying to be learn how to work the steps out of the big book, because I started sponsoring this guy a year earlier and took him through the steps. We had to listen to a cassette tape because I'd never worked steps out of the big book, so we did it by cassette, this guy's book study. And I could see that I didn't have a clue what they were talking about, you know. And I'm gonna go down to Buckingham to get a clear message. And I believed that, you know. And after the first meeting there, and I told them that's why I was there. And my sponsor walked up to me and said, "You want me to go through the big book with you?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure." Yeah, I didn't know he was going to be my sponsor. I had one. I think he was getting ready to fire me because I did finally get a sponsor, and we did a lot of work out of Hazleton magazines, and I still knew no more about what was going on than a man on the moon. And we went through the big book together, this guy down in Buckingham, and after a few weeks, it was pretty much revealed to me he was my sponsor. And, you know, because they started having requirements of me to do this stuff and things I ought to be doing, and, you know, told me I needed to start making form a commitment to. It was five meetings, he told me, and the three in Buckingham and keep going to two in Oak Ridge. And I tried to quit going to Oak Ridge several times, and he told me I got to keep going. Someone needs to carry the messages in the big book there. And I'm like, why am I the guy Cindy goes? You know? you know, and he also told me, you know, I needed to, one time he even told me I needed to get a haircut, you know. But I finally did after a couple more months. You know, I'm still this rebellious guy, you know. I don't want to do things, but other than that, I followed his directions, whatever he's told me to do. And, you know, besides, oh, you know, I've talked to him about the third step a few times, and one of the first things was, well, you know, you're not going to know what God's will is for you until you do the rest of the steps. And then you still might not know what God's will is for you, you know. You need to just get active in Alcoholics Anonymous. And making a commitment to four or more meetings a week. And I do that. And I go to four meetings every week and sometimes more. I think this is the sixth one this week because Cindy led a meeting in Charlottesville on Thursday. And I don't need a night off anymore. You know, I used to think I needed nights off. I got TV shows to watch and work to do at the house. And I don't do any of the work at the house. And I don't remember the next day what the TV show was about, you know. It's still in the back of my mind who played in the Super Bowl this past year. But I always think that's a real important day, you know, the Super Bowl. And it's not, you know. I don't remember who played 2 years ago in the Super Bowl, you know. I used to be into all that stuff, you know, but I'm not today. And because it's still fun to watch a game now and then, but I know that's not important, you know. It's not, to me it's not anyway, because I never remember it, you know. But anyway, you know, it's just been real important to me to start going to all these meetings. And I enjoy coming here. And I pretty much always enjoyed going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, but it's kind of different now. You know, the meetings I still go to that we talk about the weather, what the cows are doing, you know, what they're doing on football day and all that stuff, they aren't as appealing to me anymore as they used to be. You know, I like coming here and listening to you guys talk about working the steps and how they're, you know, changing your life. I like that, you know. I guess I should tell you that, you know, today I know that I'm selfish and self-centered, and I have a lot of problems with resentments and fears, and I found that out by working the four step, talking to my sponsor regularly about, you know, my anger. I seem to have a lot of anger, and today, you know, I work with the public, and it's outside, and it's hot, and I don't blow up at people. And I used to be in hot weather, man. I was a real hot-headed dude, you know. And I'm just not that way anymore very often. And, you know, I've always followed that one idea in the big book, not an idea but a suggestion, that when anger crops up, I immediately stop and ask for help from my higher power. And I've never followed through with the rest of it that I should call somebody immediately afterwards. But I've started doing that a little bit, but not right at the moment. You know, I got a job and he's got a job. But I do talk to my sponsor about the people I've gotten angry with recently. But I do ask God regularly to save me from being angry today. And I pray for other people that I'm angry at. And I never used to do that, you know. I've had resentments for a long time. And they don't seem to plague me anymore. It's almost like an automatic reaction, you know. I guess that was the first time I remember doing it. I was down in Alabama, and I was working at a cashier at a grocery store. And they had this policy that if it rang up the item wrong, it's free. It's not pay the right price. It's free. And no one ever made the grocery store do that. But I told these customers they needed to do that. And the manager's coming over. They're the only ones that could change the cash register. And this cashier, head cashier, told me that I had to quit telling people that, you know. And I'm like, no. You know, and she's coming over, and I'm ready for this confrontation. And it came across me, you know. God, save me from being angry at this woman. Because that's the only way I do confrontations, get mad, you know. I can't explain to you in a calm manner that we're going to disagree here, and, you know, I'm right. She's the manager, though. She's right, you know. But anyway, I remember asking God for help. I guess I've been doing that for a long time. That's why most people don't know that I have a lot of problems with anger. But today, you know, it's like fear plagues me all the time. I'm afraid to have confrontation, you know. I'm in prayer a lot more today than I've ever been in my life, and it's changing me, you know. I'm a better person than I used to be, you know. And a lot of people told me they can't imagine me as a drunk, you know. Because I was a partier, you know, rode motorcycles, hung out in bars every day, you know. And that's, you know, not. I still ride a motorcycle, and I'm not, you know, inclined to go get drunk, you know. I can do anything today that I want to, and I'm really relieved of that. You know, like I said, we was at eating place that serves liquor today, you know. It wasn't the kind of bar I'd hang out in. What was it called? St. Ruby Tuesdays, you know. Cindy got a gift card to go there, and I would have got thrown out of a place like that. I've been thrown out of places like that. You know, they just don't go for rowdy behavior. Guys are looking for cue sticks to hit someone in the head with. But, you know, I don't know what I was going to say. I hope I've made it a little while here. James did tell me, though, if I only make it 30 minutes, then he'd take up the other half hour. I went 30 minutes, dude. I don't know if you guys stand out in the front yard and smoke cigarettes and think about what you're going to say the next time you're at a speaker's meeting, but that's what I do. And I had all these wonderful things thought up, you know, but I don't know. They're not here right now. I'm still a daydreamer, and I guess that's okay. I really don't have much else to say. I'm grateful to be here, and that's it. Thanks.